I'm back with Lieutenant Colonel Ken Reeves. It's March 3rd, 2005, and we're in Sydney, BC. We left off discussing your equipment, so we just go into, were you well equipped for Korea?
Oh, I remember now, yes. Well, the short answer is no, but the fact of the matter is that the military, the army particularly, had never gotten beyond the weapons and equipment that used in the Second World War. And in fact, it was pretty close to the end of that war, and they were just, it was a function as much as anything of money. Plus, I think there was a lack of foresight on the part of senior staff, you know, from the top down, I guess. They were too busy trying to reorganize what was left of the Canadian Army into something that represented a useful sort of force. In fact, what happened at when I joined the Army in October of 1946, there were three infantry battalions, and I think one armored regiment and one artillery regiment, and plus supporting forces like Service Corps and Ordnance Corps and that, but very small. Probably not as strong as, say, for instance, the brigade that went to, the brigades that went to Korea several years later. And the training that was done the training I took initially was pretty basic stuff. We were stationed in Brockville, Ontario, and there was no real training ground there. You went out and did a few exercises out with the permission of farmers and the odd time without. But that didn't change until about 1940, early 49, for instance, when my battalion, the RCR, moved up to Petawalo. And by that time I had left and I'd gone out to Rivers when they formed the SAS. And then when it was decided that the infantry battalions, the three of them, would become airborne, the SAS basically sort of evaporated over a period of about a year. And so when there was no SAS, I was sent over to the para-wing as an instructor, pushing guys out of airplanes and that sort of stuff, and until 51, when the Korean War broke out, and I was accepted for commissioning and then went off to a battalion and eventually went up Korea. Now, what we had in Korea were the old Lee Enfield rifles, very accurate, ideal for target shooting. They were used through the Second World War, and they were very good rifles, but they weren't, they were individual, single shot, fire, reload. And they survived, they sufficed, I should say, in Korea, but compared to the Americans, who had a lot of automatic weapons, we were probably under-equipped. But for instance, I wound up commandeering a Thompson submachine gun that we found in one of our, when we moved to a new location, we found in one of our bunkers, and my platoon sergeant saw it first and grabbed it, and I said, "Well, rank hath its privileges, Sergeant, and I'm the one that does the patrolling, not you." So. But we were inadequately equipped. Now, when we talk about artillery then, though, the guns, they were, I think I'm right in saying, in the early days, they were the British 25-pounder, which was a very good gun. It had a good range and was easy to maintain and use. Later on, and I, at some stage of the game anyway, perhaps after Korea, they switched over to the American gun, which was a good gun, but it It had about 3,000 meters shore range. As far as combat dress is concerned, we had in Korea we had the old battle dress, but Canadians being Canadians, so we scrounged around. In fact, I wore when we were in the line, I wore a British Army flannel shirt, a British Army sweater, and Canadian bush pants and Canadian boots, that sort of thing. It was not a time when the Canadian Army was very well equipped, but things did change later on, and we got new rifles and but we had things like the Vickers machine gun for quite a long time, and I took a course on it, and before I went to Korea, 52, and eventually when I was in, after the truce was signed, I became the machine gun platoon commander, which was a lot of fun, but it was a big heavy gun, but it was very accurate and long range. Other types of equipment? Well, the submachine gun was the, what was it, the Patchett? No, it was the British Sten gun, which, in fact, we had them, but I wouldn't use one of them because we never knew if it was going to shoot or not. And we did get our hands on a few of its replacements, which were Patchetts, which we traded with the Brits. We got things like they didn't have access to different kinds of rations that the Brits liked, and a bottle of scotch would go a long way. And I didn't drink. I drank when we were out of the line. Had a couple of drinks, but lost all desire when we went in the line. So I would say that we were basically, compared to some of the other armies, poorly equipped. And I'm not so sure how good it is now. The artillery pieces were probably the best equipment we had. We also, the tanks, I can't remember what they were, but it wasn't a tank war. Eventually, when we were there, we had them up in our company positions, and they sniped with them. And they're very accurate. But they didn't see too many to snipe at, but we had targets for them. Daytime targets and very little at night because of their inability to really see it at the kind of distance. I mentioned the clothing. That didn't change until the combat clothing was issued in about 1960, I think it was. Ironically, by that time I was a captain, and I was on a staff job in Army headquarters still then, and my job was to supervise the remaining development for combat clothing for the troops. And at that time, it was very good. They've changed it now. They've got the camouflage coloring now, which I'm not so sure is really the answer. What we have was the olive drab, and it got dirty. You just blended right into the background.
What about other supplies, like food or just like everyday equipment for living the soldiers?
Well, the rations we got in Korea were good, very good. Again, they were basically American rations, which our soldiers didn't like too much, but they weren't that bad. But we did supplement them with British rations as well, which were very good. And this was an arrangement made. The Canadian Brigade or Canada bought it from the Brits. It was over there. Supply them. So by and large, I think the food was more than adequate. He got a little tired of hamburger meat. We had, I may have mentioned to you, we had our Lance Corporal Cook. He had hamburger meat. We got it almost every day, and he only knew one way to cook, and that was to make stew out of it. He wasn't very popular for a long time. Then they sent him to the Brits and take some training in cooking, and he came back, did very well.
What about in the way of the number of soldiers you had? Did you feel that Canada provided you with enough soldiers to do the job?
Well, I think we're better off in numbers then than we are probably now. No question about it. I had, a platoon strength was, I think it was one officer and either 38 or 39 soldiers. And I had, there were 39 of us, including myself, my platoon sergeant. On three of the occasions we went back into the line. The last time when I think I told you about this long, and I was up the point there, so they decided to give me, I think I was down to about 36 soldiers, and they brought me up to strength, but by and large, it wasn't too bad, as far as the numbers concerned. As far as the training concerned, that was another area and a problem for us in my battalion for quite a while. I think I told you about that last week or last time.
Speaking of,
but from the point of view of numbers, we were pretty well off, better than they are today.
So being ill-equipped or not
poorly equipped.
Poorly equipped is a better word.
Think, yeah.
But a lot of numbers. Did you have? Was there any resentment towards the government in the fact that you weren't as well equipped as other countries?
Not resentment. We were a little envious a bit, but we got along. And by the time we re-equipped ourselves with a combination of British stuff, some American stuff, and what the rifle, the weapons we had, the heavy machine guns and the rifles were okay. The submachine gun, which was the old wartime, what did I call it? Was it the Stinger?
Yeah.
Nobody would take that out on a patrol because you never really knew it was going to work. So we scrounged around. The Canadians were great scroungers. We could may not have looked like a regular force if we ever paraded with the stuff that we took into the line, but we were okay.
Was there any, you say that you swapped equipment and rations, was there much interaction between yourselves and American soldiers or British soldiers?
A fair amount. Not between me, that was my sergeant's job. But in fact it developed into a semi-organized sort of system where we did trade more with the Brits than we did with the Americans, but then there were things that the Americans didn't have that we had, and it was kind of interesting because we were in the middle, Brits, Canadians, Americans, and we would we'd do a trade with the Brits, and it would just go right past our battalion up to the Americans, because we got what we wanted from them. It may have been weapons or ammunition or something like that. And but the American rations and the Americans, they were boring. I felt sorry for the American soldiers because everything was out of a can, and it was canned hamburger or canned stew. Well, we had a lot of canned stuff as well, but they, for instance, they never had butter. They didn't have jam. Right? So we did trades in that. And for the Americans, a bottle of scotch, 40-ounce bottle of scotch, would get you a lot of stuff.
Looking back now, or even after you came home and was a peacetime soldier, did you feel that your contributions to Canada and serving in Korea were recognized?
Well, let's put it this way. I guess the short answer is no. But when I think I told you I got wounded, not too badly, but I was out of the line for a few days.
Was that the shrapnel?
Yeah. I was then married to my first wife, and she got, unfortunately, I couldn't stop them, but she got a message saying that I was wounded in action. She was working in the bank in Barrie, Ontario at the time, and of course she was, when she got the, they marched into the bank with this message, and she just read it, and she was really upset. And she told me later that she said most of the staff in the bank didn't know that there was any fighting going on. It wasn't well known in Canada from the early days, a little bit. People who read the newspapers probably knew more, but the fact is it wasn't widely advertised. There was no attempt by the government to really sell the fact that Canadians were serving in a foreign country in support of the South Koreans. There was some, but a lot of it passed over right over people's heads. They didn't connect.
Did you and the soldiers know that while you were in Korea? That you basically
not really. No.
Did it matter?
No. No, we were kind of busy, but I got an inkling when, of course, I got a letter from my wife, and she said, "Well, this is, describe what happened." And I thought, "Well, dear, I guess maybe they don't know." I said, "Oh, it can't be that way, you know." But I was pretty naive, a young guy. I think I was 22. But when we got home, we came home, we got on an American ship, came back, landed in Vancouver, got on a train, and we dropped soldiers off at various places en route so they'd go home on leave. And I got off it went as far as Toronto. And people just didn't know what was all the fuss about. The only battalion, our first battalion, the CO Peter Bingham, he was a great believer in publicity, and when his battalion came back, they weren't the only people they dropped off were those who were out on the west coast, and the rest went all the way to Toronto, and we had a big parade in Toronto, and there was it Toronto? Yeah, in Toronto. Yeah. And there was a huge crowd turned up for that. But it was advertised. Yeah. And Peter Bingham made sure it was advertised. He was that kind of a guy. But I think the other battalions, I'm not sure about the Patricias. I don't think anybody knew any more about what they were doing than knew about what we were doing.
Did that bother you?
No, I don't think so. I didn't let it bother me. I thought, well, I was a soldier. That's civilians, you know.
When you were there, you were defending South Korea from a communist aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
Was communism versus the West a big issue among the
soldiers? Yeah, I think it was. And it developed even more so. More, of course, in Europe than out there. Europe was the sort of main potential battleground, but the bad guys were the communists, and the good guys were us. Quite frankly, we didn't really think about it very much in the battalion when we were in Korea. We weren't saying, "Oh, we're here to defend democracy." You know, we're here because we're professional soldiers. We're sent well. I shouldn't say we were all professional soldiers. Most of the officers, most of the senior NCOs certainly were, but not all the officers. but most of the, a lot of the troops, I would say, probably 40% of the soldiers that we had, maybe a higher percentage, were, they were in for 3 years, and my platoon sergeant, as a matter of fact, came up to me. We'd been in Korea for about 6 months, and we were still in the line, and he said, "Sir, I want to go home." And I said, "Yeah, so do I, but you know, there is a bit of a war going on." He said, "No, but my 3 years are up." I said, "Well, I think that the exigencies of the service demand that you will stay here until you go home. Then you can get up. And but I will check it for you," and I did, and I got the answer from my company commander. He said, "Tell him to soldier on." And he did check it out. And so my sergeant carried on. And he was okay. He didn't much like it. But when we got back to Canada, and we said goodbye, and we went on 6 weeks leave, which was fine, and I reported back into Petawawa, and about the first guy I saw was my platoon sergeant back in uniform. He said, "Geez, sir, I went shopping with, I can't remember his wife's name, I knew her quite well, and he said, I had to spend $20 on groceries. Now, back $20 could buy a huge stack of them. And he said, I thought, I better get back into the Army for you."
Looking back on your time in Korea, would you go again? Like, do you regret it at all? Or?
No. My father was a professional soldier. I think I've told you that already. And I've got a picture of him in there, his medals. So I knew from the time I was sort of that high that I was going to be a soldier. And as a professional soldier, you train to defend your country, go to war. So I never had any qualms about being in Korea, except I didn't want to get killed. I think certainly the officers and the senior NCOs, the sergeants and up, they were pretty well the same way. As I said, probably some of the soldiers, the corporals and down, some of them probably had that desire. They didn't really want to be there, but they signed up. And the ones that didn't go on absent without leave came along with us. And I think I mentioned to you the numbers probably had in 1950, when we were trying to get ready for Korea, we fluctuated between 1,500 and about 1,100, 1,200, something like that.
After World War II, Canada basically demilitarized.
Pretty well.
Did that happen again after Korea?
No, because of the situation in Europe. By the time we went to Europe, we went to Korea, I think they had started rebuilding the forces and the army. We went from 3 battalions at one time to 12, and then they cut back to 9, I think. That's infantry battalions, and with the consequence increase of artillery and armor and the whole thing, it expanded. And we had, at one time, there were, well, how many were in the army? About 60, 70,000 altogether, I think. And pretty good army, too. Overall, there were about 120,000 in the forces altogether. My figure of 60 or 70 may have been a little high, but not too much.
Very well. That's all the questions I had. Did you want to add anything?
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
Is there going to be, you know, what you're doing? You're writing a paper, are you? And how is it going to be received? Any idea? Apart from the fact whether it's good or bad, but it's on the subject.
Well, the subject is oral history as a historical resource,
mm-hmm.
comparing it to secondary sources. And I've found that I've learned a ton from interviewing you mm-hmm. and General Pitts.
Yeah.
I'm going to interview Major Reich tomorrow.
And oh, yeah.
You learn...
I don't know him.
You learn so much more.
Yeah.
And you can read in books. And I read John Bishop's autobiography, and I interviewed him last year. I learned a lot from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Bishop very well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you just learn so much more. And mm-hmm. the questions I ask you may seem irrelevant to you, but they can be extremely relevant to historians. And
mm-hmm.
like asking you how you felt when you came home with the whole forgotten war stigma, mm-hmm. and how it didn't bother you. When you ask people who didn't stay along in the military,
yeah.
I've heard that it bothered them very much. That they felt totally underappreciated.
Yeah.
And it's
there's no question that I didn't feel underappreciated, but I recognize the fact that we weren't, the average civilian didn't a lot of them, you know, they don't read newspapers, I guess. They didn't even know that there were Canadian troops in Korea mm-hmm. and that we were actually fighting. So, but I guess I was, I knew enough and I had, I wasn't surprised, let's put it that way, and it didn't bother me too much. As we say, well, that's typical Canadian. You know?
I think, too, after World War II, they'd been at, the nation had been at war for so long.
Yeah, there's no question about it. Yeah.
The 50s is prosperous, the baby boom.
Yeah.
No one wanted to think about it.
No,
especially in a place like Korea where yeah. they really couldn't identify with
it. Yeah, and it wasn't as if we were in Korea defending Canada,
exactly.
as was the case in Europe, albeit at long range.
There was still a legitimate threat.
Yeah. If we hadn't gone, it wouldn't have affected, the North Koreans might have won over the South, but I doubt it very much. The Americans were there. The South Koreans were. We had some of them come into the battalion. I think I told you this. Mm-hmm. We had a few come into the battalion. And they trained with us, and they weren't well trained. The South Koreans. They were shown how to fire a rifle, and that was about it. And we gave them a lot of training with us, and although it wasn't as much as we had had or they should have had, they felt a lot better for it. And I think, if they're properly trained, they made very good soldiers. They're very brave.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a war that impacted on Canada very much.
That's why I asked you if there was a feeling that you were defending the Western way of life from communism, or it was just, I want to be a soldier. I missed out on World War II.
Yeah.
Your case is different because you were a professional soldier.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. It just, what I thought of, well, I am a professional soldier, mm-hmm. and Canada has gone to war, and they want me to go, so I'll go. You know, I expected to go. I didn't have a feeling that I was saving the world, sort of thing. But by the same token, we were there to do a job, and that was our duty.
Mm-hmm. I know that for the normal soldier, it was a volunteer. That's how you signed up. It was all, the whole force was volunteer.
Yeah.
So your case is different, obviously, but then I would wonder if they signed up because of the communist threat or because they've heard so many stories about World War II,
yeah.
or they have a military tradition in
yeah.
the family,
yeah.
whether it was actually a East versus West
yeah.
moral.
Well, I think it was East versus America
yeah.
to a certain extent. Yeah.
Did the Americans dominate the Western forces there? To the
oh, yeah, there, was, yeah. there were. I don't know how many were there, but they
well,
were.
Numbers were. Well, I
numbers, yeah. But
did you feel that you were just an extension of the American force, or did you feel.
No, we figured we were better than they were.
Good.
We sure did. And there's no question about it. Even even our, you know, our privates who hadn't been in the Army for more than maybe a year and a half or two, goddamn Yanks, and there wasn't a dislike of them, it was just that we had, Canadians had a lot of pride, and rightly so. And we had a friend, I had American friends, I had more, actually more Americans eventually than I knew Brits. And they were different than Americans, you know. Very difficult to describe the difference, but they were, you know, they seemed to be, had an aura of gung-ho-ness. Whether they deserved it or not is a different question. But well, they had a lot of casualties, and they're the thing that we saw and didn't like was their tactics. You know, they had 120 or so men in a company, and they might take a whole bunch of casualties in one shot. We couldn't afford that anyway, but we felt that they shouldn't have tried to afford it. But that's there, and they still operate the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, gung ho. Well, there's gung ho, and there's just moving over the top.
Maybe an advantage having a smaller force, and you can't afford a battle of attrition, which is a terrible way to wage your war.
It is. Yeah, well, there's really a great waste of energy and resources. But it's the human animal is he figured it out, or she figured it out, or whichever, and I don't know if we'll ever not go to war again. I'm thinking 100, 200 years down the road,
even longer. We've been at war forever.
Yeah, and it's you think the human race would be a bit smarter than that, but we have our moments when we're smart, but not too many.
Well, maybe not. Yeah. Come in.
So now, when do you finish your